Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Anucheed 49 continues with the same point of the spiritual nature of the body of the Supreme Lord. So, Nama Rupitva Vidhi Nisheda Shruti Bir Vivadamananam Vivad Avasare Tadeva Hi Upapadayati. The same is shown to be true in a statement which uses the opportunity afforded by disagreement among contenders, citing shrutis, both affirming and denying the Supreme having names and forms. Okay, there are apparent contradictions. There are some statements of shruti that say that the Supreme has form, or they're describing the form of the Supreme, or at least the qualities of the Supreme. And then there are other Shruti statements that deny that the Supreme has any form or qualities. Actually, there's no disagreement among the Shrutis. This is just a fictional device to talk about, you know, a quarrel among the Upanishads. There's one unified purpose, even if we could say it's all the intelligence of God. You know, therefore, God's not going to be having a fight with himself. Or you can understand that various sages, given that spiritual intelligence by the Supreme Lord, are expounding the scriptures. But even though we have different sages, different people presenting their opinions, they're not going to disagree either, because they have a unity of purpose and they're all understanding in line with the desire of the Supreme and the opinions of the Supreme. They're rishis because they understand and are obedient to the opinions of the Supreme himself. And therefore, they're not going to actually be the real sages are not actually going to be fighting, quarreling with one another. But there are apparent contradictions. And therefore we can fictionally depict this as a quarrel among the Upanishads. And here it is Daksha, in his prayers, describes this quarrel. Astiti nastiti cha vastu nishtayor ekastayor binna viruddha dharmano avekshitam kinchana yoga sankhyayo samam param yanukulam brihattat. This is 6th canto, chapter 4. Between the two contrary conceptions of one and the same visible world, taught in the doctrines of yoga and sankhya about the visible world, that it exists and that it does not. So this is a different point. One point was, does the Supreme have qualities, does it not? There's apparent contradiction about that. Also, is this world real or totally unreal? There's disagreement about that. So between, and yoga and sankhya seem to teach two different ways, that the world exists and that it doesn't exist. There is perceivable a unique entity which reconciles the contradictions in a favorable way. That is the Supreme. So the presence of the Supreme, The Supreme is the arbiter of the apparent contradictions. The world can be in one way real and one way not real in its relationship to the Supreme. Okay, Sri Jiva Goswami says, Astiti Yogaha Stulopasana Shastram. It exists is stated by yoga, the scriptures teaching worship of the grossly visible. Okay. The yogis are finding the Supreme within their own bodies. If they were totally denying the real existence of the body or anything material, they wouldn't be worshiping the body or worshiping through the body. Continuing, Tatra hi yad bhagavato nama rupitvam shriyate tad drishta kalpana lagavad gotapatadi lakshanakila namadeyatvam patala padai adikatvam cheti vidyate. When we hear from yoga, scripture, that the personality of Godhead has names and forms, do we hear that? Well, Patanjali says, Ishvara Pranidhanat, that you can pursue your yoga practice also by meditating on the Supreme Lord. So he doesn't specify how to meditate, but that must imply something to meditate on, some form. So he's indicating, and then later yoga scriptures may give actual description how to do that meditation. So when we hear from the yoga scriptures that the personality of Godhead has names and forms, it is thus being enjoined by the principle of explaining giving facts in the simple possiblest way. Simplest possible way that he possesses all names, including those of pot and cloth, and also that the realms patala and so on are his feet and so on. Okay, everything is the name of God. All the names are names of God. We understand the names of the demigods. Demigods that are worshipped in the Vedas. They're just representations of different aspects of the Supreme. The names of the demigods are really names of God. Well, here we take it even a few steps further. All the names, even the word pot and the word cloth, are actually referring to the Supreme, ultimately names of God. Although we wouldn't be, chanting in kirtan, pot or cloth, but they're ultimately names of God. And also, we read about worshiping, meditating on the universal form. The different parts of his body are the different parts of the universe. And it's true, literally, that universal form is the repository for the original forms of the different parts of the universe. The planets and the inhabitants of the universe all are coming, they're prototypes of all their universal form. The only thing is, the universal form is not really God's body. It's a material body. But you can meditate on it as if it was the body of God. That's taught in yoga. Okay? In very general sense. It may not be Patanjali's yoga, but the basic school of yoga can incorporate also worship of the universal form. Yogis are sometimes called Hiranyagarbhas. Their school was founded by Brahma, Hiranyagarbha. Hiranyagarbha is also the name of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And so the yogis are, in a sense, worshippers of Garbhadakshay Vishnu and of the universal form. The Patanjali Ashtanga system is just one system of yoga. There are other systems also. nastiti sankhyam jnana shastram tatrahi nisheda shruti bis tasya nama rupitvam yan nishidyate tat prapanchika nama rupitvasya kalpitatvat sarvadaiva nastiti nischiyate. It does not exist. That means this world doesn't really exist. Is stated by the Sankhya, the scripture teaching the cultivation of knowledge. Scripture. So the school is founded on scripture, not just on some teacher, but there's a book originally. You can say that the elements of all the schools of philosophy can be found in the original Vedas. Although the Vedas are not taking sides, but they present all the basic ideas. And then later, various sages have formulated schools of these philosophies. And they wrote their sutras as foundational text scriptures written by sages. This is Smriti, not Shruti. So there's Sankhya Smriti, Yoga Smriti. And then you can find elements, original elements of Sankhya Yoga and all the other systems in the original Shruti. But the sages come along and write their Smritis, formulating their own, each philosophy and establishing separate schools. So there's a school of Sankhya. There's Sankhya taught by atheist Kapila. There's another Sankhya, which is older, taught by the Lord Kapiladeva. But Sankhya can be understood in a broader sense to be all kinds of analytic study, cultivation of analytic knowledge of the essence of reality. Let's call it metaphysics. So there's various schools of metaphysics, not just this one or that one. Sankhya in the broadest sense. So Sankhya generally teaches it does not exist. These are the scriptures teaching the cultivation of knowledge. We see such in the Upanishads. There's lots of cultivation of knowledge in the Upanishads. But then you have Sankhya Smritis written by the founders and the later teachers of the Sankhya school. Okay. When in these scriptures the Supreme's having name and form is denied by negative statements of Shruti, it is being established as definite fact that material names and forms, being artificial productions, do not exist in him at all. He doesn't have any material names and forms. Okay, now we'll read the commentary. Daksha, as the great progenitor of human population in the Chakshusha Manvantara, Daksha was there in the Swayambhuva Manvantara, but he got himself killed. He got into trouble. Now he's taking birth in the sixth Manvantara again. So in the Chakshusha Manvantara, he was born from Marisha, the wife of the 10 Prachetas. In preparation for carrying out his duty, Daksha performed severe austerities at the holy place Agamarshana in the Vindhya hills and worshipped the Supreme Lord Hari, offering him elegant prayers. Just before the verse under discussion in this Anuched, he began to describe how the energies of the Lord inspire non-devotees prone to philosophical dispute to form contrary opinions about the nature of the Supreme, entangling themselves more and more in bewilderment. Okay, the verse before the one that was the topic of discussion of this Anuchet is as follows. The first verse just before this, spoken by Daksha. Yachakta yo vadatam vadinam vai Vivada samvada bhuvo bhavanti kurvanti chaisham muhur atma moham tasmai namo nanta gunaya bhumne. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead, who possesses unlimited transcendental qualities. Acting from within the cores of the hearts of all philosophers who propagate various views, he, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, causes them, the philosophers, to forget their own souls, while sometimes agreeing and sometimes disagreeing among themselves. It's nice to have an interesting philosophical argument, but what's the value of it if you forget your soul in the process? Then, I'm sorry, I interrupted the verse here. Thus, he, the Supreme Lord, creates within this material world a situation in which they are unable to come to a conclusion. I offer my obeisances unto him. The next verse, beginning astiti nastiti, reaffirms that the personality of Godhead has transcendental senses, the one that is in this anuccheda. Okay, continuing. The terms yoga and sankhya are used here broadly, not just to refer to the two classical schools of Indian philosophy, but to opposite general endeavors found in all ages and cultures of focusing attention either on the concrete manifestations of the Supreme's powers or on the unreality of everything material. The yoga method is exemplified in many scriptures, including the original Vedas. The Purusha Sukta of the 10th mandala of the Rig Veda, for example. Are you awake? Okay, no, I just wanted. If you were asleep, I wanted to wake you up. That's all. Okay, the Purusha Sukta of the 10th... Okay, the Purusha Sukta of the 10th mandala of the Rig Veda, for example, depicts the first performance of ritual sacrifice by the demigods in the newly created universe, the ingredients for which were taken from the body of the Purusha, Lord Garbhodakshay Vishnu. Purusha evedam sarvam yadbhutam yachabhavyam. The Purusha is everything in this world, whatever existed in the past and whatever will exist in the future. Rig Veda 1090.2. Nabhya asid antariksham shirshno dyauksamavartata padbhyam bhumir dishakshotrat tata lokana kalpayan. From his navel came the middle sky, and from his head the heavens evolved. From his feet appeared the earth, and from his ears the directions. Thus they manufactured the worlds. Okay, so that's right out of the Rig Veda. Yoga meditation on the universal form. The Sankhya viewpoint is found in many seemingly impersonal passages of the Upanishads. Yada yesha etasmin adrishye natmye nirukte nilayane bayam pratishtam vindate taso bayam gato bhavati yada hiye vaisha etasmin udaramantaram purute atatasya bayam bhavati. When someone fixes his mind on this entity, which is invisible, not embodying any soul, not describable in words, devoid of a location, and devoid of fear. Then he becomes fearless. But when the same person creates some idea of distinction in this entity, then his fear begins. So if you start to think about differences in the Supreme, then you're in trouble, according to this statement. But what does it really mean? The opinions of yoga... Oh, I don't discuss it here, but anyway. We understand no material distinctions. So you can look for the spiritual distinctions. That's okay. In the Supreme. Continuing, the opinions of yoga and Sankhya are both true, reconciled perfectly in the personality of the Supreme. The names of all living and non-living beings, even those of simple objects like pots, are originally his names. The planetary systems of the universe are reflections of his bodily limbs and are composed of matter that is his own energy. Still, all the names and forms of this material world are artificial creations, some from the imagination of God and some from that of demigods, sages, and humans. Okay. Any questions? Yes, Narada, go, Papa.
Hi, Krishna. It's about the lore bewildering or inspiring the rishis to argue amongst each other and being convinced about their different philosophies. Yeah. And
yes.
And then there's also one statement in the Bhagavad Gita where one becomes a fear, when one can overcome fear, attachment, and anger. And then part of anger is that people become confused because there's so many philosophies.
Yes. And that. And does he get angry?
Yeah, and they get angry. And
okay.
They give up their search for the absolute.
There's
see so many philosophies. So sometimes we're also grouped amongst, some, according to the karmis or the non-devotees, people, they think, oh, we're just another philosophy. So, yeah.
Okay, what's the question? Why is God doing this?
Yeah.
Why is he making the philosophers quarrel? Okay, there's a story in the Old Testament of the Bible that, I forget the name of the kingdom, Babel, but there was a kingdom. They decided, we're going to build a tower to reach heaven, just like Ravana did. Was it Babylon? There was some more specific name, some city, where they decided they were going to build a tower to heaven, and they were hard at work at it. They did, you know, put all their efforts into it, and they were actually threatening to do it. They, you know, the tower was getting very tall. So God, he decided, no, I'm not going to let them do this. This is not, you know, can't just barge your way into heaven. So he knocked down the tower, and he scattered these people all over the face of the earth and made them all start speaking different languages so they couldn't understand one another. So this is supposedly the origin of the different nations of the earth and of all these different languages that people can't understand one another. And they end up quarreling. So that's God's arrangement, because we're trying to barge our way into heaven with our speculative knowledge. And God just knocks us down by making us quarrel with one another over our philosophies. It's the way of keeping us from barging our way into Vaikuntha by mental speculation. You know, this is Krishna, anaham prakashak sarvasya, yeah, yoga maya samavrita. People don't see me because I cover myself by my yoga maya potency. And all the gyanis and all the yogis will never find me because I'm hiding. And I arrange for them to quarrel with one another so they never find me. Okay. Anything else? Madan Mohapur and then Sarvagyapur.
As you were answering the question by Damodar Gopal Prabhu, I just found the verse. I remember that there is a statement in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam where it is explained by Chitraketu Maharaj why these quarrels happen. It says here, because of polluted eagerness to arrive at the right conclusion, their theories are incapable of revealing you who are transcendental to their mental conceptions. It says here that because they're so eager to be right, they're always wrong.
Because they're so eager to be right.
To be right. And he says, yeah, because of their polluted eagerness to arrive at the right conclusion, their theories are incapable of revealing you who are transcendental to their material conceptions. Yes. And he goes on to explain this big quote, but this is the essential part of it. Sorry. I want to ask you a question, if I could.
Yes.
In your commentary, you say at the end of it that...
What names are created by demigods, sages, and humans?
Just a second. Oh yes, that's it. Yes. Still, all the names or forms of the material world are artificial creations, some from the imagination of God and some from that of demigods, sages, and humans. In other words, my question is, like, we have two statements. One of them is that whatever names we have in this material world, they are actually the names of God, and that's why God is called Sarvanama in some places. But on the other hand, some of these terms we use in this world are creations of humans. So how do we distinguish, as if there are some
it's
primary
like
or some
basically
secondary
languages
terms?
Are created by the from the intelligence of God. The original language, let's say the language of the Vedas, is directly coming from the breathing of God. And the breathing is an expression of his intelligence. God's not a machine that just breathes mechanically. His breathing is not different from his thought, his feelings. So the original language of the Vedas is coming from the primary intelligence of God. So all the words in the Vedas are coming from God's mind. But language then becomes translated. There's different languages. Beside Vedic Sanskrit. Not everybody in the universe is speaking Vedic Sanskrit. They're speaking all different languages. But there's a prototype, deep structure of language, you know, discovered by Noam Chomsky in 1950. That all languages are basically the same if you dig enough down onto the surface. There's a basic structure of language that's there in every language. So every language has a component that's created by God. You know, no human being, not even demigods, have a laboratory in which they can make new languages, real languages. Artificial languages really don't work. They're not actual real languages. Real languages aren't artificial creations. They're created by God. But then they get extended. Languages are created by God, but they can be extended. They can be added to. So... there are conventional words, especially names of proper names can be created and added to a language. New people, new things get new names. And demigods, sages, or ordinary humans can add such names to a language. Just like this is called ThinkPad. You know, somebody, you know, in IBM came up with the name. I actually met these people. I met the engineers who made the first ThinkPads. And they came to a computer show in Miami, and they showed, you know, this way back 20 years ago. So somebody there in that IBM company made up the name ThinkPad. It was the creation of a human being. The language is original, comes from God, but demigods, sages, and humans can add new words, create new words.
So should we, like, meaningfully say that it's not that they're creating new terms, but they're probably mutilating or changing, altering the original terms beyond recognition. So otherwise, they'll have to admit that they have their own independent power to create alongside with God.
Does give us some power to create something a little bit new. Just like when an artist creates his work of art, it's not exactly the same as nature. It's an image of nature, but it's also something new. So God gives artists creative potency to create something new. It's not, you know, it's a private thing. You know, when God creates a mosquito, he creates trillions of mosquitoes. When Picasso, you know, draws a bird, he only draws one or a few. He can't create, you know, self-reproducing birds so that you end up with trillions of them. An artist can't do that, but God can do that. But an artist can make a painting that's original or a work of art. That's a kind of creation. Something that wasn't there before, and now it's there. But that's just a power given to a finite creature by God to also create something. Yes?
I don't know if this is going too much on a tangent, but is it that there's some languages that are come from God and some other are?
Which languages don't come from God? And if it doesn't come from God, that means somebody else figured out the language. Which language? Like, for example?
Well, like, for example, English. Okay, English is a corruption.
I know the New Testament was translated by a committee of scholars under the control of King James I. You know, and those scholars came up with a translation of committee of 40, came up with 50 people, came up with a translation of the Bible. But was there a committee in the beginning that came up with the English language? Who? If God didn't create the English language, who did?
Like, there's some languages that are original and they're old, and then after corruption.
Yeah, okay,
corruption,
so English is not corruption. English is wasn't there before, say, 900 AD. But okay, in 900 AD, who created it? Can anybody but God create a language?
I mean, the root languages maybe like
okay,
Sanskrit.
Yeah,
I don't know if he created Hindi.
Okay, but okay, it's yeah. Like okay, English is derived from certain older languages, Old Norse. And French and Latin, you know, all add components to English. But English is a new language. You know, once it comes into being as English, it's a new language. Who had the intelligence to make that new language? Well, you're born from your parents, okay? And you can say you came from your parents. Your parents are just instruments. They didn't figure out how to make you. They didn't have the intelligence to plan you. Who planned you? Who figured out this English language? Who came up with the idea? Can anybody but God actually come up with a whole language? A real language? You can say, okay, it comes from older languages, but that's just the raw materials. English, you can make English from the raw materials of pieces of other languages. But the genius of making it into a new language, that you need intelligence for, not just raw materials. Who had the intelligence to make the English language?
So something like Salvaceri dis.
Which?
Salvaceciam ridisanivisto, matasmentir ganam aponam, just something like that?
Yeah. But it wasn't, you know, in this case, it wasn't a conscious creation of anybody. It wasn't a committee. Let's, you know, we're tired of speaking Norse. Let's make a new language and call it English. Nobody came up with that idea. Not even a committee. It just happened. Thousands of people who were talking something, they gradually changed the way they were talking. And then before they knew it, they were talking English. But they didn't even know what they were doing. They were completely unconscious of what they were doing. So how can you credit it to any of these people who were totally unconscious that they were creating the English language? You can't say that they had the intelligence to create English because they didn't even know, were completely oblivious to what was happening, that they were making a new language. It just happened by, you know, that super soul. The only person who can really be given credit for it is the super soul. So again, even new languages can only be created by God. Because human beings don't have the brains to figure out a real language. Even demigods don't. First, sorry, go ahead.
For example, there is one language, artificial language, is called Esperanto. I don't know if you've heard about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's
so
the
use of it? But it's created by human beings. I don't know. It's maybe it's not so successful because nobody speaks of it. But
it's of almost no use. I mean, you could find, you know, you can find a, you know, web page in Esperanto, but nobody really uses it. It's like, you know, you build a, you know, a model of a body, you know, out of clay, but it's not alive. It's not alive. It's just a dead body. So your Esperanto language is not alive. It's not a real language.
Although it was supposed to be like some kind of universal language, which anybody can speak and communicate with anyone.
It's not universal. It's very much biased to the Romance languages. You know, it's just a takeoff on Latin. It's not universal for someone who you know, for the Chinese people, it's not universal. It's completely foreign for them, this Esperanto. But then the first part, remember? Okay, same thing. Okay.
Krishna saying Gita, Aham Sarvasya Prabho, then how can we say, you know, this language is created from human beings and this it is created by God and something like this?
Well, okay, but everything comes from God, but some of the things come directly from God. Just like...
Yeah, but ultimate source...
Ultimate source, yeah. But he doesn't do all the work himself. We know there are two phases of creation, Sarga and Visarga. Vishnu arranges for all the elements to come into being, but then Brahma takes over from there and manufactures the actual forms and the planets. That's done by somebody else, Brahma. But he's acting empowered by Lord Vishnu and acting on his behalf. So you could argue, well, why can't a demigod or even a human being make a language? Why not? It's just that languages are not within the, you know, they're just too hard for a finite creature to create. Too complicated. Otherwise, a finite creature like Brahma or some demigod can do some creating, although it's ultimately done by God, but they're acting as his agents.
Okay. And Krishna stated in Gita this, Buddhir Buddhimatam Asmin, I'm the intelligence of intelligent person.
Yes. Yes.
And in another text he said, on this Rasoham of Sukunte Pravas means Pranavasarfid Shabda Kai Paurusham Drishu. He said, Paurusham Drishu.
Yes.
I am the quality.
Ability.
Yeah, ability. Paurusham Drishu means his skill, his quality, and his ability.
Okay.
Then, if even he's like Sarvagya Prabhu said already that someone created some language is not being used nowadays. Still, it's created from Krishna because he gave the intelligence
right.
For that person.
Yes. Yeah, Krishna could give somebody the intelligence to do that, to make a language.
But I also heard there are a few languages like a code language, you know, for writing they use, especially advocates and this, that, they...
Yeah, but that's not a separate language. That's just a different way of encrypting an already existing language. When you're writing an encrypted code, it's a code that's a translation or a rewriting of something that's in an already existing language. You know, you can't write code messages unless they're written in some language to start with. How can you decipher the code if there's no way to know what language it's supposed to be? Just like they have these ancient cities in India from 8,000, 10,000 years ago, Harappa, Mohenjo-daro, and they had a sophisticated written language. There's many tablets that have samples of that language. but nobody can decipher it. It's only 400 symbols. With computers, they should be able to figure it out. The problem is they don't know what language it's written in. It's obviously not Sanskrit that they were speaking in these cities. And they don't know what language it was. They tried a few different languages and nothing seems to work. They can't decipher it because they don't know what language it is. So it has to be an identifiable language. Otherwise, making a code out of it, encrypting it, you can't decipher it. Okay, anything else? Okay, let's read the next paragraph. Taduktam ubayamatam asyaeva prak. Sasarva nama sacha vishvarupaha ityadina yan yan niruktam vachasa nirupitam ityadina cha. Both of these opinions, that's the opinion that this world is real. Yeah, and this world is real and this world is not real. Both of those opinions. Both of these opinions were spoken in the verses previous to this one. In the words beginning, he has all names and he has all the forms of the universe. And those beginning, whatever is expressed and defined by words. Okay, that's a little cryptic. Let's see what the commentary says about that. Yeah, I'm going to jump ahead to the commentary to make some sense out of those two sentences. Daksha spoke these two verses just before the topic verse of this Anuchheda. Okay, I think we read the verse after, 32. Well, here's 28 and 29. 31 is the verse, 6431 is the one that's the head verse of this Anuchheda. Here's 30? Oh, and I read 31. Well, here's going back two more verses, 28 and 29, spoken by Daksha. Savai mama shesha vishesha maya nisheda nirvana sukhanu bhuti sasarva nama sacha vishwarupak prasidatam aniruktatma shaktihi. May that Supersoul be pleased with me. The Supersoul is realized when one is eager for liberation from the unlimited varieties of material life. One actually attains such liberation when he engages in the transcendental loving service of the Lord and realizes the Lord because of his attitude of service. He has all names and all forms. Sasarva nama sacha vishvarupa. When will that Supreme Personality of Godhead be pleased with me? Okay, that sounds like the yoga presentation. He's got all the names and all the forms. The visible forms and names in this world are his names and forms. Okay. Then the next verse spoken by Daksha. Yadyan niruktam vachasa nirupitam diakshabir vamanasota yasya mabhut swarupam gunarupam hitat tat savai gunapaya visarga lakshana. 1 second, 6429. Okay. Anything expressed by material vibrations, anything ascertained by material intelligence, and anything experienced by the material senses or concocted within the material mind is but an effect of the modes of material nature. Now it seems to be saying the opposite. Anything expressed by words is just a creation of illusion. Anyway, is but an effect of the modes of material nature and therefore has nothing to do with the real nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord is beyond the creation of this material world, for he is the source of the material qualities and creation. As the cause of all causes, he exists before the creation and after the creation. I wish to offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Yanyanirukam vachasanirupitam. Everything that's expressed by words is just a creation of material energy. Seems to be the two opposite viewpoints. This world is real, it's not real. But somehow it's reconcilable. Doctor saying one thing and then the next verse saying the opposite. Okay. Both of the, going back to the paragraph, both of these opinions were spoken in the verses previous to this one. In the words, beginning, he has all names, and he has all the forms of the universe. And those words beginning, whatever is expressed and defined by words. Okay, now we've seen where that comes from. Continuing. Astiti, nastiti, chavastuni, nishta, yayos, tameba, vivadam, sputayati. Binau, astiti, nastiti, evam bhutau, virudhau, dharmau, yayos, tayok. The argument between these two conceptions of visible reality, that visible reality, we do see something, but is it real or not? So the two conceptions of visible reality, that it exists and it does not exist, is elucidated by saying, so there's an apparent argument among these two viewpoints. What it really means is, among these two views, in which there are these contrary characteristics of it exists and it does not exist. Question. Nanu astam anayor bina vishayatvam netyaha ekastayo samana vishayayo. But can't, here's this Purvapaksha suggestion, make a simple reconciliation. But can't these two qualities belong to different objects? That something does exist and there's something else that doesn't exist. They're not the same thing. No, it is said. They are, quote, present in one, in the same object. The existing and the non-existing can't get away with it. Can't avoid it. Can't avoid the fact that the existing and the non-existing are there in the same thing. Ekastayo is the word that Daksha uses. Tadevam vivade sati tayor yatkinchit samam samanja satvenaiva avekshitam pratitam vastu tadvayor api brahand mahat anukulam bhavati. While such contention goes on, there is a certain entity perceived as reconciling these two views. So what reconciles the views? Not anybody's argument, but the presence of the Supreme Lord. The fact that he's there reconciles everything. And that entity is greatly, very much complementary to both of them. What is that reconciling factor? Kim tat samanjasam yat param namarupad atyanta tadabhavat chavilakshanam. What is that reconciling factor? That which is different, distinct from both name and form on the one hand and the absence of them on the other hand. Yatra Yugapan nama rupitvam anama rupitvam api vaktum shatyeta tad vilakshanam kimapi nama rupa lakshanam eva vastu ityartaha. And about which it is possible to say at the same time that it has name and form, and that it does not have name and form. Etad uktam bhavati. Ekasmineva vastuni nama rupitva vidi nisheda bhyam parasparam shrutayak para hatar tak syuhu. In other words, it is a particular entity distinguished by names and forms different from those of others. He has names and forms that are different than everybody else's names and forms. In summary, this is what has been said. By both affirming and denying the possession of name and form in a single entity, the various statements of Shruti seem to contradict one another's intended meaning. They seem to contradict, but, as has been reasoned above, by his transcendental nature, the Supreme possesses spiritual names and forms, which provide reconciliation. And it is this possession of spiritual names and forms which is established as the actual purport of both the affirming and the denying statements of Shruti. Atra paratvain obayatrapi praktana yuktya samanjasam aprakrita nama rupitvam eva vidi nisheda shruti tatparyen upastapyata iti tan matam vivada matram. Therefore, these opinions are held in opposition to one another only to make contention for its own sake. There's no need to quarrel. The reconciliation is there. But people like to quarrel just for the sake of quarreling. The Vedas actually don't quarrel with one another. Okay, I'm continuing in the commentary, third paragraph. Unwilling to concede that the Supreme has real names and forms, impersonalists propose that descriptions of form and formlessness in the Upanishads refer to two different beings. There's one Brahman, Saguna Brahman, and one Nirguna Brahman. They're different things. That's one proposal. So these impersonalists say that only Saguna Brahman, the imperfect expansion of the Supreme as the person God, has names and forms. Nirguna Brahman, the real Supreme, has no qualities. But then the Supreme Lord would be illusory, a creation of Maya. And most of the texts of the Upanishads, which describe the qualities of Brahman in positive and negative terms, would be about illusion. Because the Upanishads are written in words, and those words are describing qualities of the Supreme. Sometimes it's saying things negatively. He's invisible. But being invisible is a power. If I can walk around invisible, then I can go and steal everybody's money out of their drawers and nobody would see me. That's a power, a positive power, although we express it negatively. Adwishatwadi gunako dharmokti. The Supreme has qualities. The Upanishads say that he's invisible. That's a quality, a positive quality, but expressed negatively. So if Nirguna Brahman, if Saguna Brahman, all the forms belong to Saguna Brahman, who is an illusion, then all the Vedas are talking about, all the Upanishads are talking about, is that illusion. They have nothing to say really about the real Nirguna Brahman. They can't. As soon as you start using words, you're talking about qualities. So the impersonalists run into this difficulty. They can't insist that the real absolute has no qualities at all without destroying the authority of the Vedas. Then they're actually Buddhists. Prajapati Daksha corrects this misconception in his prayers, stipulating that these contrary natures exist in one and the same absolute truth. Notice that he's discussing Mayavadi philosophy way before Shankaracharya, back in the previous Manvantara. The contention of philosophers can go on forever until someone among them realizes Bhagavan and becomes his devotee. So where does the reconciliation come? How can we stop the quarrel? When somebody becomes Krishna conscious. When Krishna is present, when someone realizes him, then everything can be reconciled. With that realization, both views of form and formlessness can be satisfied. Bhagavan must be avekshita, which is the word Daksha uses, avekshita, factually experienced by devotional realization. Krishna says in the Gita, Ascharya vad pasyati kaschidenam, Ascharya vad vadati tataiva chanyaha, Ascharya vad chainam anyakshrinoti, Shudvapyenam vedana chaiva kaschit. Some look on the soul as amazing, some describe him as amazing, and some hear of him as amazing, while others, even after hearing about him, cannot understand him at all. The most advanced soul sees the Supreme Lord with his own eyes, and others can also progress toward the same perfection by hearing from him, from the most advanced person. Others less fortunate may not have the chance to hear or might not believe after hearing. But at least at first someone must see the Supreme. Otherwise, the contention among philosophers can never end. Even without the benefit of any resolution of their arguing, the thinkers of the world are attached to contention for its own sake. They don't care that there'll never be a resolution. At least they have their tenure as professor in the Department of Philosophy and they're going to be paid their salary. They don't care that the questions of philosophy will never be solved. It doesn't matter to them. As explained by Gotama, the founder of the Nyaya school of epistemology and logic, there are three grades of debate, three kinds of debate, called Vada, Jalpa, and Vitunda. Sincere seekers of truth engage in Vada, debate in which the impartial laws of logic are allowed to settle the dispute, and both sides are ready to accept the conclusions. In Jalpa, a disputant does anything he can, including dishonest word jugglery, to defeat his opponent and win the debate. In Vitunda, the third kind, a weak thinker, unable to prove his own claim, is satisfied with pestering the opposition with quibbling attacks. Three kinds of discussion. Krishna says in the Gita, Vado Vada Vatamaham. Among those who are arguing, I'm Vada, the first kind of debate. It was in the previous three Anuchedas, 46 through 48, that reasons were presented for acknowledging the Supreme Lord's possession of spiritual names and forms. Because Jiva Goswami says here, as has been reasoned above, by his transcendent nature, the Supreme possesses spiritual names and forms which provide reconciliation. So as has been reasoned above means in Anuchedas 46 through 48. Okay, we don't have time for questions right now. We're over time. So we'll continue tomorrow. Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Sri Bhagavat Sundar Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.